Let's go ahead and go to Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 7. We're looking at this long address of Moses the prophet right before he goes up on Mount Pisgah and dies. He's trying to cram in a whole bunch of review material for his 40 years of students that are going to go into the promised land without him soon. And we're kind of just hitting a whole hodgepodge of topics because he's reviewing all the different things that he's passed on from God, or clarifications of those things that he's passed on from God. Chapter 24, verse 7 begins with a capital crime of historical importance. If a man is found stealing one of his brothers of the people of Israel, and if he treats him as a slave or sells him, then that thief shall die. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. Kidnapping was a capital crime. It deprived people of their God-given freedom. Now, they did have slavery that could result from indebtedness. It could be your personal indebtedness, the indebtedness of your family, the indebtedness of your country. But that sort of slavery was to pay back something of value. And over time, especially under Israeli law, you would be back to the status of a free person. By Israeli standards, you would never be a slave more than 6 years of the work cycle. But kidnapping someone and turning them into a slave without an indebtedness attached to it, if you got busted for doing that, it was execution. And I point to this as the reality that the slavery that went on in early American history was in large part kidnapping slavery. And it would have been punishable under this Israeli law with execution. That's how atrocious that sort of activity was. Verse number 8, change of topic. Take care in a case of leprosy to be very careful to do according to all the Levitical priests shall direct you. Now, I know the English Standard Version and other English translations have the word disease added in, because they are functioning under this idea that leprosy was Hansen's disease, which is a neurological disorder which causes damage to extremities and causes them to die off and sometimes even fall off because of that. I am telling you with great confidence that the Bible is not referencing Hansen's disease. Leprosy was a mark placed by God on a person, place, or thing that needed to change, to be evaluated, and possibly even to be gotten rid of. And it consisted basically in a human of losing the color in your skin. The melanin totally disappears, and you end up with a pale white, translucent skin. And it was very obvious, and people who had leprosy mark had to go into isolation until whatever it was that had caused the leprosy to be placed on them had been resolved. And then there was a process by which they could be brought back into society because their issue had been dealt with. So that's the leprosy that he's talking about. And Moses says, make sure you follow the procedures. Verse 9, remember what he who is your God did to Miriam on the way as you came out of Egypt. So he references back almost 40 years to what happened to his older sister, who was complaining about Moses being married to a black-skinned woman and even challenging his leadership. and God struck her with the mark of leprosy for a week. And that means he took her skin color away for a week because she'd been complaining about Moses being married to someone with very dark skin color. And so Moses says, don't forget what happened to my sister. God marked her because of her sin. And God is apparently going to mark other people in your community for their sins. And that needs to be dealt with according to the procedures I've given you from God. Verse number 10, change of topic. When you make your neighbor a loan of any sort, you shall not go into his house to collect his pledge. So you've got somebody acquainted with you that falls on tough times. They need some financial assistance. So you give that financial assistance to them. In return, they give you something of value as their way of saying, I want to pay you back. And if I can't get you paid back, at least this thing of value will be my attempt to pay you back ahead of time. So we talk about this as being collateral. So Moses tells the people, if you're going to take collateral from the person that owes you some money, you don't go into his house and pick through his stuff and decide what you want. Instead, verse 11, you shall stand outside, and the man to whom you make the loan shall bring the pledge out to you. So he'll go in, figure out what he has of great value, and bring it out to you. And that should be sufficient. Because why are you doing this? You're not doing this to get something from him. You're doing this out of the kindness of your heart to help him out and for him to keep his dignity, so that he can give you at least something of value during this time that he is borrowing money from you. If he is a poor man, you shall not sleep in his pledge. You shall restore to him the pledge as the sun sets, that he may sleep in the cloak and bless you. And it shall be righteousness for you before he who is your God. Now this references back to an earlier time when this topic first came up, back in Exodus 22. And that is, the poorest people, the only thing that they have of value is their clothing. And in particular, this outside, thicker material clothing known as the cloak. And the cloak was used as an overcoat. It was used as a bedroll. It was used as an awning against the sun. It got used for all sorts of things. And if you were the poorest of the poor, that might be the only thing you had of value. And the rule that was given earlier is now referenced here. If the only thing they have of value to give you is their cloak, you bring it back to them every single night so that they can sleep in it and be warm. You can hold on to it during the day, because remember, part of the reason here is to give them some sense that they are accountable to you for the money that they've borrowed. So they can give it to you every day, and then every night come and get it again. And then give it back to you the next morning while they're pursuing, presumably, some work in order to pay off their debt. But every night, they need that cloak to sleep in. And God will take note of your thoughtfulness. Because this is all intended to be part of the golden rule that we know so well in the New Testament. You do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that means you want people to think about your feelings and your situation and have compassion on you. And if that's what you want for yourself, then most certainly that's what you should give to other people. Verse 14, You shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy. We talk about this being the working poor. Whether he is one of your brothers or one of the sojourners who is in your land within your towns, you shall give him his wages on the same day before the sun sets, for he is poor and counts on it, lest he cry against you to he who is, and you be found guilty. Now, the working poor that we're seeing described here are basically the people who are living hand to mouth. Every bit of money they earn each day goes to their maintenance for that day, their food and their clothing that they need, basically to live off of, their room and board. And that is why Moses tells these people, which he's actually told them this before back in Exodus, is you pay these people day by day. You don't tell them to come back later to get their paycheck because they need this money now. And each time this topic comes up, I always like to reach out to those of you who are in supervisory roles or who are in business ownership roles. And I plead with you, take into consideration the need that your workers have of not having to do 2 weeks of work before they can get paid for that work. You know, when somebody starts at a new job in a new town, that they are being asked for rent up front and deposits for utilities up front. They're being tapped well ahead of time for all of the finances that they're working hard for. If you can possibly do it, pay them daily from the get-go. And if you really want to help them out, give them some sort of forward of their paycheck so that you pay them ahead of time so that they can get started with all of those other bills and things. And I promise you, most of them will look at you as the best possible boss to work for, and they'll work harder for you because you're thinking about them and not the bottom line. And so it's compassion. It's the golden rule. That's the thing that we keep seeing here. And if you don't, if you're the type of boss that's only looking out for the bottom line and you stiff your workers, you underpay them, or you cheat them out of back wages or whatever it is that might be described in this section here, God will remember that. Book of James, the first book of the New Testament was written, I believe, probably only a couple of years after Jesus' death and resurrection. He talks about how the Lord of Sabaoth, the Lord of the heavenly armies, is listening to the cries of those that are being mistreated by the unrighteous wealthy. And he will bring judgment on them eventually. I think he describes about them, they're basically fattening themselves up for the slaughter of judgment day. And we need Christian bosses that will do the right thing when it comes to taking care of especially the working poor. But honestly, everybody should be paid a proper living wage for the work they do. Verse number 16, change of topic, but a very important passage. I think it speaks to a philosophy of theology that we should understand. Fathers shall not be put to death because of their children, nor shall children be put to death because of their fathers. Each one shall be put to death for his own sin. Ezekiel chapter 18, the soul that sins is the soul that will die. God holds us accountable for ourselves and not for the actions of others. And this is one of the reasons I am not in any way, shape, or form a Calvinist. I am an anti-Calvinist. I'm not Arminian because Arminius had other issues. I am an anti-Calvinist in the sense that I do not believe that God holds us accountable for Adam and Eve's sins. We, none of us, were destined for hell because of what they did in the garden. We, every last one of us, have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We got ourselves in trouble because God makes it plain here. He doesn't hold the sins of others against us. Every criminal dies for their own crime, not for the crime of somebody else. And so this is one of my verses that I point to whenever I debate somebody on the topic of Calvinism, that God would be violating his own principle if he sent any of us to hell for the sins of Adam and Eve. Okay? Verse number 17. You shall not pervert the justice due to the sojourner or to the fatherless or take a widow's garment in pledge, but you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt and he who is your God redeemed you from there. Therefore, I command you to do this. So it's more back to the golden rule idea. We do unto others as we would want done unto us. The Israelis remembered what it was like to have been slaves in Egypt, forced to do work for other people without being paid for it. And so they are to now treat other people fairly. And that includes people that are not even Israeli. They're not to take advantage of foreigners passing through their land. And they're not to take advantage of the people who don't have moms and dads. And they're not to take advantage of women who don't have husbands. They are to treat everyone fairly and with compassion, because that's what they got from God. And you pass it on. Verse number 19. Along this topic of thinking about other people ahead of yourself. When you reap your harvest in your field, and you forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that he who is your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. Now, when we talked about this in the earlier account, and that goes back to the book of Exodus again, I believe. It's Leviticus this time. Leviticus chapter 19, I think. The edges of the field always belonged to the widow and the orphan and the foreigner that was visiting Israel. It was not to be cut and harvested by the field owner. When they made their sheaves, you know, they'd take the sickle, the hand sickle, they'd grab a bunch of the stalks of grain in one hand, and they'd cut it down at the bottom, and then they'd wrap one of those little one of those stalks around that whole bunch. That would make a sheaf. And then they'd put it in a stack of sheaves, and then they'd bring probably some sort of trailer in, and they would fill that up and cart them off. Anything that fell on the ground, or anything that was left in the field when they carted off all of those sheaves, all of that automatically belonged to the poor people, automatically belonged to those that had to come out here and work in order to get this material for themselves. So that's all they're being reminded about here, is don't be stealing from the poor people by going back and picking up all the forgotten sheaves. And the same thing goes in the olive trees. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over them again. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. This is the strange way, strange for those of us that don't live in a culture that harvests olives right around us. Some of you guys that might be listening to this that live where there's olives, this might not seem strange to you at all. But the way that they harvested their olive trees is they'd wait until the absolute peak of ripeness, and then they would beat the different branches of the trees with sticks or some sort of implement that would make the olives drop off and down onto a net or down onto a piece of fabric in order for them to collect them all up. Well, some of the olives would have already fallen ahead of time before that day of the beating of the olive tree, and other olives would be still not quite to the peak of ripeness that they'd let go from that vibration. And so what Moses is saying here is you have to leave those pre-fallen olives for the people that we're talking about here, the people like the widows and the orphans and the strangers, and the ones that are still left on the tree after you finish with the beating of it. Those belong to them as well. Leave them alone, because if you take them, you're stealing from the poor, because God says that belongs to them. Same thing with the grapes. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not strip it afterwards. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. You picked the time when your grapes of a particular vineyard were at their peak ripeness, and you sent your harvesters through with their little knives, and they would cut the bunches of grapes that were ripe. And they would ignore the bunches of grapes that were not quite ripe. They just leave them on the vine, and they never picked up the grapes that had fallen on the ground. And when they went through on that sweep along the vineyard rows, the poor, the fatherless, the widow, the orphans, the stranger without any means of support, they would be able to pick up the fallen ones and to pick up the ones that ripened later. Because that was God's order. To take it away from them was to steal from them. And this all has to do with compassion and consideration of these people. Verse 22. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, therefore I command you to do this. So, golden rule, you do unto others as you would have them do to you. Or, do unto others as you wish it had been done unto you. And so the Israelis were supposed to live by this standard. Chapter 25. If there is a dispute between men, and they come into court, and the judges decide between them, acquitting the innocent and condemning the guilty, then the guilty man deserves to be beaten. The judge shall cause him to lie down and be beaten in his presence with a number of stripes in proportion to his offense. 40 stripes may be given him, but not more, lest if one should go on to beat him with more stripes than these, your brother be degraded in your sight. All right, so the Jewish people had corporal punishment. Now, when we talk about corporal punishment, sometimes we're just talking about a spanking that would happen on children. This is talking about adults that have misbehaved so badly that the court system has decided they should be spanked using a rod, which is a bendable stick. I always like to think kind of like a bamboo cane. And they would stretch them out and give them as many whacks as the court said they deserved for whatever the offense was. And if it's a repeat offense, they would probably jack the number of swats up. In some countries now that have corporal punishment, they only do like 3 or 4 or 5 of these whacks because people tend to learn their lesson and not get back involved in it. The Israelis, we're told, you limit it to 40, no more. Otherwise, the person will be shamed in front of the society for that many whacks. Now, it is interesting that the Pharisees went on to say, we might miscount So let's only do 39. And then if we've miscounted and do 40, we'll still be okay. We'll be inside the framework of the law. Now, the Romans also used corporal punishment against criminals. And we know that Jesus received his flogging at the hands of the Romans. And it wasn't with a rod. It was with a flagellum. And he probably, if you count all the different lash strokes, received much more than 40. But for the purposes of the Israelis, the limit was to be 40, no more. Well, we're out of time, so have a great weekend, and we'll get back together into the Word next week.